Got to turn up the volume so you can hear me, because I don't talk very quietly, do I?
Yeah. So why would we do an element of criminal law on a person's property? Why? Exactly. The two are interrelated. Remember, your property rights and the law, they lump together. Right? Remember that? One of those four postulates, speaking of which, I need to drill that into you again. It's important. Can you tell me what the first postulate? Rights. Property is a collection of rights, not a collection of things. It's not a bundle of sticks. Despite the fact it's been described that way, it's a collection of rights. It's an intellectual concept. It's bundling your thinking. Property is a collection of rights, not a collection of things. What's the number two one? Correct. Property and the law are intertwined. They grew up together. Remember that you get married in certain states, but not in England. They're closely related. Criminal law came out of property rights. Not only that, but almost every element of criminal law related to property rights, even things like murder. And we'll talk about that. What's number three? Can you tell me? Not looking at your cheat sheet, you break my heart. Go ahead.
Our foundations of law recognize that we're endowed with property rights.
Property rights, legally, come from our Creator. Part of the Declaration incorporated into the Constitution. Government doesn't give us our property rights. Indeed, your neighbors don't. People don't. You get them as being a human being. You're born, you have property rights. Ding. The second you come out, you got property rights. They come from our Creator. And what's the fourth one? Equal, exclude, possess, use, and transfer. Okay, remember those four postulates. They are big. Nobody passes the class without them on the test. I was saddened that a few of you did not know them, even though we've said this several times, but I will tell you, always want you to succeed. For those of you who do not get the grade on your examination that you had hoped for, and by and large, in a general skimming, again, I've got the grade back, they appear to be very good. But for those of you who did not get the grade that you had aspired to, I give extra credit. I want you to succeed. So if you come up with an idea, might go see court session, might go visit the legislature, you want to go to the law library, write a report, I go to one or two pages, maybe two or three pages later, I'll boost you up if you do that. Okay? So you have to pick the topic. I don't pick it for you. I have to approve it. There is an extra credit sheet on our website. You write out a paragraph and tell me what wonderful thing you want to do, and extra credit. Helen? I get it, don't I? Helen knows. Okay. She led the league last time, so she didn't even need it, but she was a witness. Okay, on to criminal law. Who likes law and order? Raise your hand. Not as many as I thought. It's my youngest daughter's favorite show. She likes Liz Bob. I like the original one, not all the takeoffs, because I like the courtroom scenes. I'm a lawyer. They're fun. you see how you build a case. The criminal law is society's ways that it deters and punishes misconduct. There's two parts to the criminal law. There's the criminal statutes themselves, known as substantive criminal law. That means you commit a murder, you're going to go to jail for 25 years to life. If you do this, then that. That's substantive criminal law. Then there's also something known as criminal procedure. That's how we determine whether you're guilty. It's how the criminal trials go. A criminal trial is different than a civil trial. The standards of proof are different. What is the biggest standard of proof for a criminal trial? We've all heard it. Correct. You have to be guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. That doesn't mean no doubt, because a doubt could be that space aliens came in and did it. But that's not reasonable. If you reasonably believe it, and it's got to be unanimous. Civil juries go. Civil juries often, depending on your state, don't have to be unanimous. They can just be a majority. Okay? But in a criminal case, got to be unanimous, got to be beyond a reasonable doubt. There is a huge statute in New York State known as the criminal procedure law that sets up all these requirements. Many of them are codifications of the constitutional requirements, including things like speedy trial. We can't throw your bony butt in jail and keep it there without charging you or without trying you. One relates to habeas corpus, again Latin for you survive, make a charge. The president, under certain circumstances of the Constitution, can suspend your ability to ask for habeas corpus. It's called a writ. A writ is just what it sounds like. It's a writing. It's a petition in the court. But you have to be able to charge somebody under New York State law. And under the federal law, too. Okay. What's the purpose of criminal law? Why do we have it? Well, number one, it's to protect the public from harm. We have the criminal law so crime doesn't occur. It's deterrence to prevent it, and punishment, which also has a deterrence effect if it occurs. Most crimes, as we've discussed before, are also torts. If I pop you in the nose, not only is that an assault, but under common law it's also called battery. Assault under common law was I just scared you into thinking I was going to hurt you. A battery was a harmful word, but it's a touching. It doesn't have to be harmful, it can also be offensive. If I grab you in a place you don't want to be grabbed, that can be offensive even though it can hurt you. Okay? That's a battery. Under New York State law that you emerged. Those things are also torts. So if I bop you in the nose, not only could I go to jail for committing a crime, you could also sue my tail end and collect a big amount of money, saying you shouldn't hit me in the nose. Okay? So you have a civil side of crimes as well. People like O.J. Simpson were acquitted on the criminal side, but convicted on the civil side. They were found liable, not guilty, but liable by having a civil trial on them as a tort. What are the theories of criminal punishment? Why do we do it? One is retribution. What is retribution? Anybody know? You got it. An eye for an eye. You do that to me, I'm going to get back at you and do it right back to you. Okay? Vengeance, as we might call it. Deterrence is self-explanatory. I don't want to do this. I don't want society to be having that done. So we're going to put in a punishment to prevent it from occurring. Restraint. If I put somebody in prison, they're not going to be committing crimes on society. Rehabilitation. If I put somebody in prison, hopefully they'll learn their lesson and not do it again. We'll get them to change their ways. And restoration, that's kind of the tort side. And I'll turn around because in criminal cases, the judge can also order you to pay damages outside of a civil trial. That's in the criminal procedure law as well. What's the difference between a felony and a misdemeanor? Words have meanings. A misdemeanor, what does the word demeanor mean? It's how you comport yourself. It's your attitude. A misdemeanor means you're doing bad things. Not horrible things. Those are felonies. At common law, a felony was a capital crime. If you committed it, we could sentence you to death. That was done through the king's court. The king appointed judges, and went before the king's court, if you were convicted, they had the option to execute you. It's serious. A misdemeanor was everything else, not a felony. Now today, we really have three levels, but the bottom is not technically a crime. You have felonies, which today are, definition of a felony today is what? Anybody know?
A year or more in jail.
Correct. A year or more in prison. That's the difference between a felony and a misdemeanor. A misdemeanor is less than a year in jail. You also have an item known as a violation, which is a quasi-criminal activity. A violation is not technically a crime, but for all intents and purposes, you're entitled to a lot of the criminal guarantees and procedures if you're charged with a violation. There's a lot of violations that you can think of. Sorry? Speeding ticket is a violation of the vehicle traffic law. There's also certain drug offenses under that. They're not technically a crime, so when you have to sign up for your job application, if you have done a violation, and I hope none of you do, but if you do, you don't have to check off that you've been convicted of a crime. Many misdemeanors are pled down to violations for that reason. Yes? Right now, a felony under New York State law is any crime which is punishable for more than a year in jail.
So the punishment is not.
Well, they're listed in the penal law right now. But there are no felonies that are less than. That doesn't mean that the judge has to sentence you to it. That's the minimum sentence that they can go below. Okay? And frequently what happens, and there's grades of felonies, you have E being the lowest level of felony, and A, and there's even A1s, okay, being the highest. An E felony is not as serious. An A felony are things like murder, terrorism, things of that nature, okay? Things like B felonies are things like rape. Let's get to the common law felonies. All of these were capital offenses at common law. They're all felonies under New York State law except for one, because it's just been reclassified from something else. I'll explain that to you. But these still exist, because the crime that has been existing forever still keeps going, sadly enough. We don't want to stop it. Maybe one of you smart people here in this room will figure out a way to do it. But presently, we have not. So all of these, Mr. and Mrs. Lambs, are currently in violation of New York State law and a crime and a felony. New York State, well, let me ask this question. Does New York State have a death penalty?
No.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. If you go into the penal law, you will see the death penalty. 1962 was the last time someone was executed in New York State. They have not fired up old Sparky since then. In 1995, the state legislature, after the United States Supreme Court had thrown out the death penalty, and after the New York State Court of Appeals had thrown out our death penalty, the New York State legislature passed the death penalty and put it on the books. Since 1995, no one has been convicted of the death penalty in New York State. One of the reasons why was because the convictions were overturned. Because there is, according to the New York Court of Appeals, a fatal error in the statute with respect to the way that the juries determine whether or not the death penalty should be imposed. So even though it's on the books, the Court of Appeals said without that legislative fix to the statute, it cannot be implemented. As a result, no district attorney currently charges under that death penalty statute. It is frequently charged under the federal law, although seldom implemented. What they do is they charge and then they get a plea bargain. The real value of a death penalty tends to be, if you look at it statistically, the fact that when you charge it, you tend to get the conviction through the plea. There is a death penalty under New York State law. It will not be used because of that Court of Appeals decision. So, for those of you who said yes, you were right. For those of you who said no, you were right too. Isn't the law a wonderful thing? That's why it's another great lawyer always say to a question. It depends. Okay. Let's go through the common law felonies. They are fun to learn, not so fun to suffer. Murder, rape, manslaughter, robbery, sodomy, larceny, arson, mayhem, and burglary. They spell out the acronym, Mr. and Mrs. Lamb. You like the Lambs? I heard those. I'm not much of an artist, but I did the best I could. Yeah. They're sipping cocktails.
Mr. and Mrs. Lamb, let's get to the first one. Murder. Everybody knows about murder. If anybody's ever seen an episode of Law and Order, watched a goofy movie, murder, under New York State law, a person's guilty of murder when with intent to cause the death of another person, he causes the death of such person or a third person under circumstances evidencing depraved indifference to human life. It's also got a second element known colloquially as felony murder. If I turn around and am committing a felony, I'm holding you up by gunpoint. We'll get to that in a minute. That's robbery. And all of a sudden, in the course of that, you get scared to death and die. Don't pull the trigger. Guess what? That's murder. You know why? Nope. I didn't intend to kill him. I never wanted to shoot him. I just wanted their money.
Because under the doctrine of felony murder, I'm committing a felony, and somebody dies in furtherance of the crime, I'm guilty of murder. What happens if I'm committing that same robbery, and the guy I'm working with to drive the getaway car whips out a gun and shoots the person? I didn't want him dead. Again, that's felony murder. If someone dies in the course of a felony, guess what? The people committing the felony are murderers, even if they never intended. Let's say they didn't even have a gun. No means to kill. Guess what? They're guilty of murder. Okay? The intentional taking of a human life with malice aforethought. That's the common law definition. But we test on the state definitions because you can more easily find it. At the end of the day, it is the killing with intent to kill. Okay. Rape. Rape is a very express, specific crime under New York State law. We're not talking about social mores. We're talking about criminal statute here. They engage in sexual intercourse with another person by forcible compulsion. Or you engage in sexual intercourse with a person who is incapable of consent. Or engage in sexual intercourse with a person who is less than 11 years old. Or who is less than 13 years old and the actor is over 18. That is first degree rape. Remember, I told you there's different degrees of crime all the way over to the highest level. Okay? Now, I was in traffic court about 10 years ago. And I was sitting there representing a client, waiting to get a case called. There's another lawyer I was defending who happened to have a rather heavy weapon. And there's this beautiful young lady sitting in the audience, right in front of the court, with the angriest expression I've ever seen on any human being in my life. And she was movie star beautiful. And I turned to the district attorney when I was negotiating my case and said, "Wow, that poor young lady out there, what happened to her? I figured she was a victim, something happened, or that she had gotten a speeding ticket and was really, really aggravated." You know what he told me? He shocked the heck out of me. She was there to be charged with rape. Yes, a young lady can be charged with rape as well as a young girl. Okay? I guess if you're charged with rape, you gotta go. So, but I will tell you that it's pretty self-explanatory. But anyway, it does not matter what your gender is. It's an issue of consent. The other party did not consent, then, or is unable to consent. If someone is intoxicated, they have been found under case law to not be able to consent. If someone is under sedation or drugs, they cannot consent. If they are a child, they cannot consent, even if they say they can. That's rape. Manslaughter. Manslaughter occurs when, with the intent to cause serious physical injury to another person, they cause the death of that person. I wanted to beat you up, but you died. I didn't mean to kill you. Murder, I mean to kill you. I want you dead. Manslaughter, I don't want you dead. But I mean to do what I did, which was hurt you. or with the intent to cause the death of another person, they cause the death of such person or a third person under the circumstances. Or I act under extreme emotional disturbance. That's I come home, I find my significant other in a compromising position, and I shoot that other person. I'm out of my mind. That's manslaughter. I didn't have any intent. There was no planning. I didn't know what I was doing. I just was so emotionally crazed. As a result, in most murders, there's usually two defense. Either A, I didn't do it, wasn't me, got the wrong guy, or I was out of my mind, I didn't mean to do it. Either one of these are homicides. Person ends up dead. Okay. Robbery. Robbery is forcible stealing. Robbery is not when you turn your back and swipe something. Robbery is, give me your computer or I'm going to do X to you. It's forcible taking. It's larceny by force. I can do it with a gun. I can do it just by threat. But it's forcible stealing. What is robbery? It is a property crime. I'm taking something of yours. Sodomy. Sodomy no longer exists as a classified crime in New York State. There's political reasons why that is. It's just not called sodomy anymore. It's still a crime. It's still a felony. It's now classified as a sexual assault. But it's still a crime to do the activities of sodomy. They just don't call it sodomy anymore. Okay? Under common law, they did. And what is it? Whereas rape is sexual intercourse, sodomy is deviant sexual intercourse. I don't think I need to explain to college students what the difference is. If you really want to make me blush, you'd ask me to, so I'm not going to. Larceny. Larceny is theft. But there's no force component in it. It's when I steal something. I can steal it because you're not paying attention. I can steal it because you're not around. I can steal it by tricking you. You can freely give it to me, but it's by a misrepresentation. I am stealing your property. Larceny, too, is a property crime. Arson. Arson is when you intentionally damage a building, or under New York State law, a motor vehicle, by causing an explosion or a fire. So if I blow up or burn down your house or your car, and I intend to do that, that is arson. Mayhem. Oh, yes, Helen. Yes, if it is done for insurance fraud, let's say I have an old, really old house, and I ask the fire department to come down and burn it down so I don't have to tear it down, that's legal. If I get a permit, okay? But if I just turn around and say, you know, my house really needs renovation, and that insurance company will pay me a lot of money, so I'll burn it to the ground, that's arson, okay? Because you're defrauding someone. Okay. And if I burn down your house and you don't want me to, that's definitely arson. Not a question. Okay. Mayhem. My daughters always tell me that mayhem is a sexist crime at common law because it's the intentional disfigurement of any part of the male body useful during part-time of war. You could not at common law commit mayhem against a woman because mayhem was not viewed as a crime against the person, it was viewed as a crime against the state. What you're doing is taking soldiers out of the army. So if I cut off your ear, that would not be considered mayhem. If I cut off your trigger finger, it would be. Because it has to be, first, a man. Secondly, a part of your body useful during time of war. Now, think about our friends in the lifeboat from Regina V. Dudley and Stevens. If they decided to eat him a little bit at a time, rather than killing him, cut off his leg and have it for dinner, they would not be charged with murder, they'd be charged with mayhem. Bunch of ears. Anybody see the horrible story today in the newspaper about the police? You know, say, police lady wanted the cookie, he just woke up and he said, it's all over the New York Post Revolution. He beat up you, may have. But anyway, and on the thing.
Yes. Okay, settle down, guys. Yes.
It could be, because remember, the question was, if you cut off your own trigger finger at common law, could you be guilty of mayhem? Yeah. Why? And, remember, it was a crime against the state, not against the person. Because you're taking yourself out of military service by doing that. Okay.
Today, mayhem is classified as a high-level assault. Okay. Burglary. The last B in Mr. and Mrs. Lamb. Burglary is knowingly entering or remaining in unlawfully a dwelling with the intent to commit a crime therein.
It's not just breaking in. I'll give you an example. Guys who are talking in the back, please. Burglary, if I go into the house for a party, I'm invited there, and I hide in a closet. I'm invited in, but I hide in a closet and don't go home. When everybody goes to sleep, I come out and steal the big screen TV. That's burglary. I didn't break into the house, but it's burglary because I unlawfully remain therein. Obviously, if I do break into the house, that's burglary too. Okay? Okay. Any questions? Yes?
What suicide was comfortable by death?
If you're effective in it, it is.
And if you try and fail,
then it's not a homicide, is it?
But it could be your common law definition, felony.
Depending on how you do it. Let's say you're just trying to asphyxiate yourself. You haven't disfigured yourself. Here's the problem. Most suicides, if they're successful, you don't need to punish the person. If they're unsuccessful, there are punishments under the law which you can sustain. They're almost never impacted, even under common law. because most people thought, to be honest with you, if you have enough problems, even under power law, you can pay an age in order. If you were, you know, had enough trouble, and you want to kill yourself, they generally didn't like whatever. Bring that to the next level of authority. Yes, it could be viewed as a crime. Could be an attempted murder. Yes.
The difference between mayhem and malingering is mayhem is intentional disfigurement, whereas malingering is just stripping responsibility and taking moments.
Malingering isn't. Any questions on Mr. and Mrs. May? I asked you on the final if you could name yourself. You give me the acronym. Murder, rape, manslaughter, robbery, sodomy, larceny, arson, mayhem, murder. Yes. Again, every one of these crimes has different levels of what we call the state law degrees. And grand larceny is a colloquial term to the highest level degree. And under New York state law, that depends on the value of what you're stealing. So if I turn around and steal bubblegum, that generally, under New York state law, is a misdemeanor. It's known as petty larceny, from the French, meaning little. Okay? Under New York state law, there is no term grand larceny. And what they do is the highest level of degree. And as a result of that, if I turn around and steal your car, well, guess what? It's a high level felony. Any other questions? No? Okay. Remember, criminal law and property, they grew up together too. Let's talk about real property. We're getting into the meat and potatoes of this course, baby. What do you think, Frank? Land is where it's at. You have land, you have it all. Anybody ever see the movie Far and Away? I know it's an old movie now, but those of you who are Nicole Kidman fans or Tom Cruise fans, it's a pretty good movie, isn't it? But the number one thing that Tom Cruise wanted in that movie was he wanted to be a landowner. Particularly in the United States, North America, those people who came here largely came with a desire to be landowners. Because Europe, I don't care whether you were in England or European continent, or even to the other places, that land was already owned by somebody else. And we have lots of land. And they could turn around and own it. What is real property defined by our friend Mr. Black? He defines it as land and whatever is erected or growing upon or affixed to it. Also, rights. There's our friend rights. Issuing out of, annexed to, or exercisable within or about it. Or immovable property. If it ain't moving, it's usually land. Why? Because a fixture is attached, can't move it. Okay? Property rights involving land, its fixtures, structures, or production. That's a simple definition. Okay, what is the importance of real property? Historically, wealth. You own land, you are wealthy. Power and life. In our earliest days in America, you had to be a landowner in order to exercise your franchise. What does that mean? You know? Let's exercise your pants, guys. That's correct. You're about ready to do that in a couple weeks, guys. In order to vote, you had to demonstrate you were a property owner. And you had to own real property. The fact you owned a horse didn't count. You had to own land. And of course, it meant life. Without property, you had no house. Without real property, you had no food. Without real property, you had no clothes. Because your very clothes came either from the crops you grew or from the animals that lived off the land that you owned. So you were bare naked, hungry, and without a place to live. Not a good place to be. So you wanted to be a landowner. That way you weren't any of those things. To truly understand rights and real property, you need to do a two-step dance. Two things. Remember our friend possession. That's number one. And the second one, time. It's possession and time. Property is so valuable. Unlike personal property, real property is so valuable that it can be divided into slices of time. When you rent an apartment, that is a time of ownership of that property. You get a lease, which will say you own that property for that period of time with these rights. There's a reversion back. Property goes back to the landowner at the time that they need that lease. Property is a so valuable thing that you can divide up the time. Now, very few people divide up personal property in time. There are some times you can ride a bicycle. Anybody who goes to Washington, D.C. these days can see that there's a bike share plan. You can ride a bike here and drop off there. But it's rare. Most of the time, when you own something for a period of time, it's real property because it's so valuable that that time makes it. Critical concepts include ownership and limitations on that ownership. And real property is so valuable that it has led to complex legal rules. Because it's so valuable, all these machinations have come in. Why does the law recognize rights and land? Why can't we all just use it when we want it together? Rights and land consist of two things. Interest in land, and we'll get to that, and interest in anything attached to the land. That's fixtures, buildings, fences, trees. What are interests in land? Ownership, leaseholds. When you become a tenant, that's an interest in land. Now remember, under common law, back in the 1500s, leases were considered personal property. Today, they're considered real property. Why didn't they want lessees to be considered landowners? Why didn't they want that to be viewed as a real property? Right comes back to the right to franchise. If we don't grant them property rights via real property ownership, they don't have the right to vote. Okay? Remember that Magna Carta thing? Who was in control? Okay. Easements. If I have the right to use your property without owning it, we'll get to all these things in detail. That's an interest in land. Life estate. That's being able to use that property for the period of my lifetime. Or pour entrevue, that's French, which I'm a very bad speaker of. for the life of another. So I could turn around and give you a life estate in the property for the life of Grandma, because we want you to take care of Grandma. So we're giving you that property for so long as Grandma lives, not for so long as you live, as an incentive for you to take care of Grandma. Okay? Then there are things like future interests. What happens with the life estate after Grandma sadly passes away? It goes back to the original owner. That ability to go back, called a reversion, to the original owner is called a future interest. It's what happens to the real property after the event occurs. Interest in land also not only include the land surface, but it also includes the subsurface. This is becoming a very important issue right now, the issue of hydrofracking. If you own the land, you own the gas that's under the land. And you can turn around and mine that by drilling a hole into the earth and tapping it out. You want to drill for oil on your yard, that's part of your ownership interest. Water. When I drill down to get water, that's my right. That's part of my property rights. There is a great dispute in the land. Historically, the law is recognized that you have a right to all property to the center of the earth. Not that anybody opposed that part, but there's now a legal commentary that debates that. Right now, the law still pretty much says that. So in your property, you can use it. Lastly, you also have the interest of what's above your earth, what's above your property. That's air rights. Those are particularly important in places like New York City. If I turn around and have a home and somebody wants to build over my house, I can charge them for that right. Now, unlike the rights below the earth, reportedly still go to the center of it, you do not have a limited right to the moon. Airplanes can fly over your property without violating your airspace rights. Okay? It's not unlimited. How far up does it go? It's a case-specific issue. Basically, the law has pretty much found that it goes as high as technology can build right now. Okay? So if it's above that, you know, the highest building in the United States is going to be, what, 1776 feet when the new Freedom Tower gets built? Well, if you build something 2,000 feet above it, question? Yes.
Something like a police helicopter contradict that, though? Because I know they're like
50
or 100 feet
without violating. Well, we'll get to that as far as easements, because under the law, there's something known as a public easement, where I don't care if you're going over with a helicopter or an ambulance driving across it, the police authorities generally can use your yard, your land, your property for purposes of their job. Okay? I'm sorry, Ed? We'll talk about that. That's known as public nuisance, and whether or not the atmosphere itself can create a right in the air. Okay? We'll talk about that as we go forward. Okay. Historically, property law was exclusively concerned, almost exclusively, with real property. Why? It's where the money was. It's where the value is. So most of the litigation, early cases, remember Blackstone who rode that horse between the courthouses to pick up the cases that were decided? Most of them, and I'm sorry to say, were not about Bessie. Sorry. Some of them were, but most of them were with respect to land disputes. Because that's where the money was. Sometimes I would say, let the cow go, because it's just not worth litigating it. Because even back then, litigation was expensive. But if you're messing with my land, it's worth my time, it's worth my money to litigate it. So most of the early case law was on it. Remember, wealth, status, sustenance, and power. Okay. Obviously, real property is one of the oldest concepts in the law. Remember, other concepts came later, but real property really started the ball rolling. Remember, we talked before that the issue of, quote, ownership is a relatively new one in the law. Didn't even exist in English common law till 1583. And in the law, that's pretty recent. Okay? One person who, for those of you who want to be submarine students, you may want to look up Professor Hopfeld. He came up with a Hopfeld analysis, which really was a transformational way to look at property. He was a professor of jurisprudence. He died rather young. And he came up with this analysis on how to look at rights in real property. And his perspective was that it was a complex web of social relations. Well, the law really doesn't follow that today, but it's an interesting analysis nonetheless. He looked at the law between real property rights as how society comes together. At the end of the day, it really is an issue, if you look at all the case law, as to your right in property. Okay. Remember Bentham? We talked about him earlier. Property and the law were born together and died together. Before laws were made, there was no property. Take away laws and property ceases. Remember, that's based on the second postulate. The property and the law are intertwined. And real property itself was the generator of that. Okay? Law was out there to protect real property. Okay? Let's go back for 1 second. Livery of season, remember what that was? Anybody tell me? Anybody know? Remember? Correct. Very good. Come on. Just for a second. Jenny, I'm a knight in the Crusades, and I want to sell my property to Jenny. I have this big castle. I'm not going to need it because I'm going to go ride my horse out. Holy Land, fame, fortune, and all that fun stuff. Maybe I'll become a king there. So I get all of you together on the lawn in my castle and say, welcome. I'm going to sell my castle to Jenny. And I take my sword and I cut out the side and I physically pick up what I cut out and hand it to Jenny. And Jenny gives me this big bag of gold coins, saying, Jenny, keep that in the Holy Land, because so things are high in our understanding, very expensive. The whole class, your old townsfolk, witnessed this ceremony. There were no deeds. People were not literate. So what we did instead was we had a ceremony called livery of season. Delivery comes from that word, livery, meaning to deliver. Okay? She delivered to me the money. I delivered to her the side of the property. It was a ceremony in which everybody witnessed. We transferred the property. You can go sit down. that we turned around and picked out a four-year-old little boy and beat him to a pulp. So he would remember this day. That was our version of recording. Today, we do not do that, thankfully. Instead of having all the townspeople come around and cutting out the sod, having all the children run away as fast as they could, what we do today is we hand over a deed describing the property. You still hand over to me instead of the bank money, a big check. And then we take the property and record it with a government official, the town clerk, to say what was done. It's a little bit different process than this era. But remember, there's reasons behind all those things. The reason they cut out the property was to demonstrate that I'm actually transferring something. Remember, real property is not movable. How do we make it movable? We cut it out of the ground. Right? How do we transfer it? We make a ceremony which we physically deliver the grass over to the other person and they pay us in front of our name. How do we remember it? We beat up a four-year-old little kid who's young enough to remember that for the rest of their lives.
Pretty brutal. But anyway, that's livery of season. Okay. Remember, there's a two-step dance. How are we doing on time, guys? 51. Okay. Okay. When you're talking about interest in land, it has all the elements of that fourth postulate, epoi, and one more. Anybody ever see that mattress commercial? At an S for savings. Anybody ever see that?
No. Nobody from Long Island. Anybody from Long Island? You run it during Christmas like every 5 minutes.
Yeah, really.
But anyway, instead of adding the S for savings, you add P for time. You have E put, exclude, possess, use, and transfer. Those are your property rights. Real property as well as personal property. But you got an added one in real property. Remember, it's a two-step dance. What's the first one? The P word. Possession. What's the second one? Time. Possession and time. What are you doing with it? Want to have a title? Just add that T for time. Why? Because property's so valuable, you can slice it up in the time. So you get that right, you get the right time. Okay?
So it's E put plus time. Those are your rights. That's your bundle. Okay. Not the bundle like they use on TV. They ring your doorbell. Okay. Okay. Whoa. I don't know why I have explosions on my PowerPoint. Yeah. Holy cow. I really don't know how that happened, but anyway. Okay. Now, obviously today we don't do livery of season anymore. Sorry, Jeff. Okay? What we do today is we hand a deed over, which is a written description of the property, because today people know how to read. Hopefully, right? We hand over that paper. And how do you know what's in that property, that real property that we transfer? Two things in that deed. They tell the story. Words of purchase. That deed describes who is buying and who is selling the property. the words of limitation describe what is being sold. Not only the property description itself, but the type of ownership interest. Remember, you can have all kinds of different ownership interests. And for how long, remember, you're going to have that T, that time. So you have those two types, words of purchase, who, and words of limitation, the type and duration. Remember that two-step dance, possession and time, right? Let me hear it. Time! Step one is the form of possession. Is it a possessory interest or a non-possessory interest? Can I have a non-possessory interest in land? What do you think? Can I have the land, the right to use it, and not own it? That, yeah. Land is so valuable, we curse this stuff up. You do. And as a result of that, you can actually get the right to use land without possessing it. That's called a non-possessory interest. Those are things like easements. We'll get to those at length. But possessory interests are the things you would think about. I sell you that property. You get to do everything you want with it. That's a possessory interest. Okay? The second part is that time factor. When do you get it? And how long do you have a right to use those rights? Is it now or is it in the future? You will see as we go forward the word fee in rights and land. Fee, simple absolute. Fee, simple determinable. Those fees have a meaning. They come from Old English. A fee is an estate in land. It has its origins in feudalism. Who remembers Jack and the Beanstalk? Anybody? Read that as a kid? What is it? What's Jack and the Beanstalk? And when he went up the beanstalk, what happened? Sorry? He went into the house, right? And what did the person who owned the house say? Anybody remember? Wait, we gotta get you guys better on nursery rhymes. Fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman. Anybody ever hear that? Be he live or be he dead, I'll grind his bones to make my bread. Remember we said in times when you did not have a literate society, they use these stories to convey important principles. Remember Snow White? Robin Hood? This is the same thing. Fee, fi, fo, fum means something. It's not just gibberish. Fee means he's come to my house. It's my castle. You've invaded that. You are a burglar. Fum is the old English verbs for anger, fume. You come into my house, I own it,
and I'm really mad at you. And under the castle doctrine, you invade my house, I can kill you. You do not have to retreat in your own home under the castle doctrine. That's criminal law. Remember, they merge. And he's warning that person who invaded his property, if I find you, you're a dead man. That's what he's saying. Fee is the home, that property interest that he has. He's expressing the castle doctrine. Okay. Haven't fun yet? Okay. What types of possessory interest do you have? Fee simple absolute. Defeasible estates. We'll go on these in detail next time. Fee tail doesn't exist anymore. But there's a reason you need to know these old forms of ownership. Because when you go and want to play Indiana Jones and go to those dusty old books and read the deeds, to be able to see if Antarctica actually did leave you a valuable piece of property. Guess what? Sometimes they have these old determinations of what that property interest is. You need to know what a detail is, even though it doesn't exist anymore, because you need to know what it is today. Right? Today is a piece of absolute. But we'll explain that later. And then you have the life estate. Life estates are fun for your life, or poor entre bay for a life of another. The non-possessory interests, easements, profits, covenants, and servitudes. I'm going to whip through this because we're going to go through it next time. Okay, property is also so valuable, it provides for joint ownership. Personal property is very rarely owned together. Not many people say, let's buy a car together. Sometimes husbands and wives or ladies do that, but not always. I could not imagine sharing a car with my wife. But houses, land, is frequently shared. I own a summer home with my parents and two sisters. It works fabulously. Sometimes it doesn't. I have to get along with my sisters and my parents. Some people don't.
Well, we all get along with each other. Man.
There are three types of joint ownership and property. Tenancy in the entirety. The thing you need to know is one word on tenancy in the entirety, because without this one word, it cannot happen. You need to be married. Only married people can own property by tenancy in the entirety. If you are not married, you cannot own property in this manner. You have to have that marriage certificate, otherwise you can't do it. It is a marital right. You have a right of survivorship. Should I disappear off the face of the earth? My wife loves to watch the serial killer shows and they look at me, so it could happen. If I disappear, that house automatically becomes hers. She doesn't have to go through some kind of legal rigmarole or go to a court. It's automatic. If I die, that house goes to my wife. If she dies, she'll never die before me. If she dies, it's going to be. Doesn't matter. This passes before the question was whatever you have a will. A tenancy by the entirety passes at the instant of death before probate. So as a result of that, it passes by operation of law. It doesn't matter if I leave the house to my kids in my will. If I own it, the tenancy in the entirety, it goes to the spouse. Period. Okay? If I own it by myself, then I can turn around and pass it to anybody I want. Okay? But if I own it in this, the second I die, goes over to the spouse. Now, how do you break up a tenancy by the entirety? If I die, tenancy of the entirety expires. Why? Because it then becomes my wife's house. Okay? It's hers totally. She can do with it what she wants. If she wants to leave, she can. Okay? Divorce. Why, if I get a divorce from my wife, do I no longer own it tenancy of the entirety? Pretty simple answer. I'm not married. We're not married. You got to be married to own it this way. Okay? Sorry? It's, if you don't split it up, it's converted back into a joint tenancy. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you can only own it as tenancy in entirety if you are married. So even if you don't sell the house, you get divorced, you're no longer tenants by the entirety. You can do it by agreement. You can turn around and I could sell my wife the entire house. Okay, that's an agreement. Okay? Or by joint creditor execution. If my wife and I have a joint creditor, like a credit card together, or some kind of loan, and we'll pay it back, they can execute against that house. But what if I decide that I want to be a spendthrift? I want to go out and get all these credit cards and run off the max. I said, I don't care, but I just want to do that. Relationship wise, I want. And my wife is a very frugal person, doesn't do that. And we own the house together. Can the creditors take the house? No. No, they cannot. Because they cannot break the tenancy by the entirety. Now, if we had both taken out that debt together, then they can. But if it's only one party, then they can. Now, if my wife dies and I get the house, the creditors are going to come after it because it's no longer tenancy in the entirety. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean that somebody should go out and spend a lot of money. Now, home mortgage is signed by both parties. As a result of that, they can foreclose on that property if you don't pay the home mortgage. They can break that because it's a joint creditor. Okay? Okay. You got to give me that one more time.
If you're a joint creditor, and somebody outside your wife, I think...
The joint creditor means that both my wife and I are on the debt. Okay? That's what a joint creditor relationship means. That's why, because both parties in the tenancy in entirety are responsible. Okay? And if that's the case, then both will have, that's the case for our work. Not for the house. I mean, I can turn around. The question was, can you have another party to give that lend you money out of that? That's not one of the people who are involved in this. The problem is on that is nobody is going to turn around and take an interest in that without being on the deed. And if there's more than two, the husband and the wife, it's not tenancy of the entirety. It becomes a joint tenancy.
Okay. What's a joint tenancy? It's very similar to tenancy of the entirety, but a little bit different. You do not have to be married, but you could be. It's created by unity of time, title, interest, and possession. That means you own it together. It, too, has a right of survivorship. It can be more than one person. Okay? It can be more than one person. But when the joint tenant dies, the others get it. It's a right of survivorship. Its severance is more expansive on this. If I turn around and have a joint tenancy agreement with three people, and I turn around and say, Greg, I don't want to be a joint tenant with these guys anymore. I'm going to give you mine. Guess what? That ends the joint tenancy. Because just like a tenancy by the entirety, a joint tenancy, you get to decide who is tenants with you. So a inter vivos conveyance ends the tenancy. It's gone. It's done. Okay? Can't do that. Death, of course, does it. Same way. You can do it by agreement. Or a foreclosure on a lien. Okay? Tenants in common. There is no right of survivorship. If we own properties, and this is the big difference between tenancy, a joint tenancy and a tenancy in common. The joint tenancy, if I die, other tenants get it. The tenants in common situation, if I die, whoever I say gets it, gets it. So if I die and I leave it to my kids, they become a tenant in common with the other people. With a tenants in common situation, you can pass down your share of ownership. It's freely alienable. Okay? Joint ownership based on percentage. If there's three, they own a one-third share. If there are two, it's 50-50. And they share proportionally in all gains and liabilities. Okay. Last thing we're going to talk about tonight, and then we'll take a break and do our case, is real property taxes. Did you have a question back there? Just stretch it. We'll try it here. Last thing before our case. The case is really fun. Real property taxes. Real property is valuable. Matter of fact, most normal humans like us, your home is going to be your number one asset. It'll be the most valuable thing you own. As a result of that, government wants to tax the thing that's the most valuable. And real property taxes are enormous. They have been around since day one. They're one of the oldest forms of taxes. And I don't think they're going away anytime soon. In New York State, they are the number one tax that people pay and make us the highest tax state in the country. Real property estate taxes and death taxes are the only form of taxation that tax you on what you have, not upon what you earn. It's a tax on an asset, not on an income. Those are the only two taxes that tax you that way. And your estate taxes, you don't pay. Your room temperature, your heirs do. So you don't pay your estate taxes, the people who manage your estate do. Okay? Real property taxes are the only taxes that you actually pay on something you own, not on something you earn or acquire. They're very repressive and very regressive. If you're old or poor, you pay the same tax, the
is if you're wealthy or young. Doesn't matter. They disproportionately affect people who are poor and elderly. They are loved by local governments because they're a guaranteed source of income. Real property taxes do not change with the value of the economy. They are static. They can go up and get increased, but they don't go down. And I'll explain why. Real property taxes are based on a percentage of your value of your house. And what happens if the value of that house goes down? That local government barely has the ability and the law to raise the rate. So as a result of that, they're still going to collect real property taxes. I paid my home, you saw it up there, it's out of the hall. My real property taxes are $13,000 a year. Okay. Anybody's counting? Much more than twice as much as I think it's real property taxes are big. They don't go down. Now, income taxes fluctuate with the economy. The amount that a government gets by income taxes depends on how well the economy is doing. Because when the economy grows, salaries go up, you're taxed at a percentage of your salary, revenues come in, and you get higher revenues. When salaries go down or people lose their jobs and incomes go down, the government gets less revenue. That's one of the reasons why in an economic downturn, there's less revenue going into the government. That's not the case with real property taxes. That house is there, doesn't go away, and they get the property. So as a result, it's a very stable source of revenue. So schools, local governments, and fire districts, special districts, sewer districts, are the ones who do it. Now, there's two things out there recognizing that these are very expensive, very regressive taxes. That they make New York State the highest tax jurisdiction in the country. And the state legislature has done to try and relieve that burden. One was done in the mid-90s. It's called STAR. It's an acronym for the School Tax Relief Program. It shifts some of the real property taxes onto the state income tax, where the state government actually pays school districts some of the real property tax. That's one program they've done to provide tax relief. The second one was done in 2011, whereby all localities now have a real property tax cap of 2%. The only way you can tax above that as a locality or a school district is it by a 60% vote of your board. So the school district, it also has to pass school district budgets are voted on by the public. The public, too, has to pass that by 60% margin. So if they go above 2% tax increase, they have to have that majority. Jimmy up front was one of the people who helped work on that bill. Didn't you? Okay, take a 5-minute break and come back and we'll do our case about our witch.
Yeah. I'm going back to Tennessee and fire.
Yep.
So let's say, for example, you got a startup, like I work at a bank.
Right.
So the means for
now,
what you do is you take a lien on it permanently, and once that other person dies, you collect.
Right, right, but,
okay?
Yeah.
But you can't own.
Okay, because I'm not my kind of thing, and we're just having owners, but like 90% owners. So that's
a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Verbose young lady. You speak your mind. It scares away many young gentlemen suitors. So it's no surprise, despite your very renowned physical attraction, that at the age of 24, you're still unmarried. Which to me, that would be like 44. Okay? But a gentleman of high intellect, who views you as a challenge, decides to ask you to marry you. Come on. Your name is George. George Martin. George is a really smart, go-getting, hard-working, genius young man. You're a blacksmith, which in the new world is a trade in demand. A lot of horses, a lot of things that need to be fixed with metalwork. And you turn around, and you are a great blacksmith. And you marry this lovely young woman, and you start to form a family. You are an amazing businessman. You are an amazing businesswoman. You are a power couple, as they would say in Spain. And while you turn around and ply your trade as a blacksmith, your bride turns around and saves the money and buys land. And she wants to turn you into a landowner, gentleman farmer. You become the largest landowner in the entire county because of your hard work and your wife's happiness. While you're there shoeing horses, she's there buying your property and renting it out, making money. You have a very prosperous life. But sadly, 1686, I don't know. After a long and happy life, George, you become a regent. You may go back and take your seat. You don't have to rest. Okay. You are now a widow. That's not a happy place. And you love George, who loved you more than life itself. But throughout the course of your marriage, despite the fact you had a marvelous marriage and a good long life, you and George didn't change your personalities, as most people know. And as a result, you were still a rather outspoken woman. And in the middle of your marriage, somebody got really mad at you and said, you know, you're a witch. I wonder sometimes if they use the W instead of the B, but they use the word witch. And they put you on trial for witchcraft. But George, you were then alive before you passed away. And everybody in town pretty much loved George. George was a hell of a sweet guy. Pretty quiet, and basically constantly returning to your wife and saying, can't you tone it down a little? You're losing the horses. And because pretty much everybody loved you, George, she was acquitted. Now, witchcraft was a capital offense. Not a law. It doesn't exist today under our present law. Not many witches are put on trial. Maybe that freedom of religion. But anyway, a common law was a capital offense, but you beat it. Principally because of your German husband, that everybody in the community pretty much belongs. I guess we can't throw his wife in jail. Well, you're now a regent, George. You don't cease being the wonderful person that you are. And you are a wonderful person. You turn around and take those landowners as a woman, which is rare in this day and age, and double them. You are an amazing business person. You are by far the largest landowner in the entire county. You're hitting on all cylinders. You're running a very prosperous farm. You help the poor. You turn around and work. You're the mother Teresa in time. You really are. You go around and help young women. You do a lot of really great things. But you are very politically abrasive. You're very outspoken. And hence become a target. You will sit down for a minute. Okay. I need you three ladies to come up just for a minute and a half. Can I grab you for a second there? Just for a second. No? You are three adolescent young ladies. Teenagers. We might call them today, in my work lexicon, teen gobblers. Okay? Maybe even pre-teen, I think they were about 13. You like to do things that little girls like to do. I'm the father of two young ladies. One of the things they like to do is talk to each other frequently, particularly about other young ladies. We would call that gossip, right? We live in a puritanical society in Massachusetts. A lot of people don't have a sense of humor. And, come on up, you three. You turn around and get in trouble for gossiping. And what is the first thing you want to do when you get in trouble? Exactly! Blame somebody else! She made me do it!
Point where
it'll get well beyond what you ever intended. The truth is a much better way. These young girls started to lie. They wanted great punishments in the Puritan religion was for lying. So they didn't want to tell people that they were lying. So the lies got bigger and bigger and bigger. The parents, like all parents, anybody hear parents besides me? But you know when you have children, your children can do no wrong. So if you say there's no way to do it, maybe. You're my girls. So the parents turned around and started to put people on trial for witchcraft. As you would identify, you became cause celebs in the community, kind of like rock stars, because you go before these trials, people would pay attention to you, you would point out the witches, and they have the shot. Now, the slave, Juba, because of this odd religion, they basically just said, please don't do that anymore. But you didn't really get out from under this as a result of that. And your parents started asking you to name additional people. And you did. I need you to help. Come on down a little bit. Here you go. You are father and son. Which one wants to be the father, which one wants to be the son?
I'll be your father.
Father? Mr. Carl. Hey. Your name is John. Your name is John. You are a judge. You are a sheriff of the county. Now, back then, money was not plentiful, particularly in the New World, only Baltimore. So, sheriffs and judges were paid on commission. You ever hear the term commissioner at a state agency? The reason why that term is coined is because they were paying a portion of what they did. You talked to these girls because you were trying the cases. And you had your son was the chief law enforcer, basically the only law enforcement agency, to go talk to these girls and say, can you name any other witches? Now, come on up, George. George is the sheriff. When he turns around and puts somebody in jail for a capital crime, he gets the crime. It is cheats, whatever that means, returns to the government, back to the state. They forfeit their property. Guess who gets to keep it? He gets a share of it. So do you. So, who here do you want to be a witch? You got it! Why? She's got the biggest estate in the county! And she's really kind of obnoxious. Who's the witch? Okay, come on down, witch. She's accused of being a witch. Why do you think actually like to speak your mind. They have a trial. You're the dad. Guess what? This is before the American Constitution. Think you have a right to a lawyer? Nope. Think you have a trial by jury? Nope. You're accused of a capital crime. The only person who's on your side is you. And if you read the transcript of the trial, you do one hell of a job defending yourself. At first you stand up and say, I can't believe this. This is insanity. I'm no more a witch than the man in the moon. I'm a good Christian woman. I don't believe in that stuff. These girls are, you don't even pick on the girls who are accusing you. You say that they're just a little loony. They don't know what they're doing. What do you think happens to her, George? Well, before the fail, she gets convicted by you. The father. The judge. You got it. You guys can go sit down and start your room. Come on, then. They throw you in jail. They don't quite know what to do with you. But the community is starting to get restless. They've taken your property. Now all your kids want that property because it's their legacy. And guess what? Was it the chief fact of the state? It's there. So you're sitting in a jail cell together with some other people that you want to believe except me, trying to encourage them, saying, you know, don't worry, this will be all right, this will blow over, you know. You really want that land. So, judge, you come out with a decree. What's the worst form of death, most disgraceful form of death? And remember, this is not our form of worse, it's the 17th century's form. Hanging! Hanging is the most disgraceful way to die. Matter of fact, if they really like you, if you're a good person, you're sorry we have to kill you. What do they do? They behead you with a really, really sharp axe. Royalty, when they got into fights over in England, they made sure that the axe was really, really sharp so it wouldn't hurt. How do you know? Mary, Queen of Scots, reportedly was not on good terms with Queen Elizabeth. So when she was executed, they said, don't make the axe too sharp. But they sent you to hang because it's a disgraceful way to die. You still believe this is all going to blow over. Guess what? It doesn't. She was convicted of witchcraft, sentenced to death, and executed. But that's not the end of the story. The governor of Massachusetts says something's going on in Salem. They pretty much lost their minds. They're hanging people as witches on spectral testimony. You know what spectral testimony is? They accepted, judge, testimony of ghosts, spirits, spoken to through these young ladies. She's a witch because the spirit said she was. Now, it's hard enough to defend yourself against the accusations of lying people. when you're doing it to a ventriloquist who's saying there's a spectrum out there? Pretty bad. There's a famous author, Daniel Hawthorne, who was a descendant of Eugene. And matter of fact, he was so embarrassed by what happened, he changed the spelling of his name so it wouldn't be the same as those. But the governor comes by a few months later and says, enough! Don't do this anymore! Of course, you're now the wealthiest landowners in the county. You get no punishment. Until I can never remember. 2001, you are pardoned. A little late. There's a governor of Massachusetts, a young woman. Jane Swift was her name. She wasn't governor. But she pardoned you. Thank you, Governor. Beautiful Suzanne Lord Martin is my seventh great grandmother. She was hung as a witch in Salem, Massachusetts. We helped to get her home. See you next week.
It's all about the property. By the way, her heirs never got the property back. How are we doing, Jimmy?
Doing well. Headed down this weekend.
Where? To Jackson?
Yeah.
Those of you who are taking the midterm, please come down.
Final push, you know?
I'm sorry?
It's a final push.
You'll do it.
How's your dad doing?
Great.
Yeah, great. And you have some good.
She's very good. Thank you, Helen.
Yeah.
Julia, your grandmother?
Yes.
That's very
something great.
Yeah.
She was an awesome lady. Okay. Thank you, my buddy. You're not taking it today.
I know. When do you want to take it? I can take it
tomorrow. We'll take it right back. Probably next week. Beginning next week.
Sorry.
Don't worry.
Sorry.
Don't worry.
I didn't mean anything wrong. I just haven't.
Sorry. We'll do it. Do you have my regular email?
Yeah, I just asked someone. It's
Bob Farley at bobfarley.org. Okay. Write it down.
All right. Okay, I'll write it down.
Bob Farley at bobfarley.org.
Do you have a 321 class on campus? Or
sorry?
Do you have a 321 class
yeah,
on campus?
Yeah, next semester.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask if you wanted me to come during that one to make it more convenient, but...
No.
Okay, sorry.
All right, what's the deal? Because he's got to take it too, so we'll arrange that. Can you do it on Monday or no?
Absolutely.
Okay. What
time?
Please send me an email.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll email you.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else for the midterm? Please come on down. Why don't you guys take a seat here? Grab wherever you want. Now I gotta read you.